Okay, so it's always nice to start the class with the reflection on the Metta Sutta. So the Metta Sutta is spoken on the words of loving kindness. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and knows the path of peace. Let him be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, not busy with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any beings in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depth, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false view, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desire, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Oh, I do.
Write it down over to you. Thank you very much.
I do apologize. My voice is not that good. I just came back from Malaysia the last 2.5 weeks ago, visiting my grandmother and my relative. But it was since 10 years since I was back in Malaysia. So I thought it was a great opportunity to visit my granny. She's 84 years old, so I don't know how long she'll be still around. So I took the opportunity to go to Malaysia and to just do some Dharma teaching and help to support Bhante Bodhidharma to do a three-day retreat at Metta Lodge in Johor Bahru in Malaysia. Then after that, we went to BGF or Buddhist Gem Fellowship in KL, Kuala Lumpur. Yep. So that was quite a, interesting experience. So it was quite good. I really enjoyed that. And also Venerable Bodhidharma also really enjoyed it too. So experience was, I think, better than what we expected. We thought that because I've been back for 10 years and Venerable Bodhidharma is quite new to Malaysia, so probably people don't really know him much. But the turnout was pretty good, because in the Metta Lodge, there was about maybe something like 25 to 28 people turn up. So that was a good crowd for a three-day retreat. And after that, we went to KL at BGF, and the crowd was basically a full house, about 50 people that turned out for the one-day retreat. So it was quite successful. And because Venerable Bodhidharma and myself, we did give a lot of talks and guidance. And the weather there was really hot, about 36 degrees, quite humid. And especially in KL, I noticed there's a lot of pollution from the traffic jam. So I do apologize. I come back and my throat is not in the best condition from too much talking and interview. And also eating the breakfast and lunch dinner when we were there. I mean, there's so many people that come and offer dinner in the morning and also at lunchtime that basically me and Venerable Bodhidharma, we can only finish maybe about 5 or 10% of what is offered every single day. It was very nice and tasty, but it was over the top. But anyway, getting back to the whole experience, so it was quite very uplifting, inspiring, and quite joyful experience that me and Venerable Bodhidharma has in Malaysia. So that's interesting. So that's to let you know what's happening since we met last time. I'm glad to be back in Perth Bodhidharma Monastery, and so the experience is good. One thing I did realize, where we go around the world, there seems to be a lot of interest for people to basically just to practice, to listen to Dharma, and to learn meditation, and also to deepen their practice. So it's always been a great source of pleasure and happiness to able to teach, because when the monks teach, we both benefit. The lay people listen, they learn, and they get uplifted, and you get a lot of gladness, peace, and joy and wisdom from when the monks teach. But also when the monks teach, it also uplift our heart, and when you teach, you also learn at the same time. You learn that what works, and the best instruction to keep to our lay supporter as much as possible, because learning is a way to sharpen one's wisdom and understanding. So that's one thing I enjoy teaching, because it does sharpen my wisdom and improve my speaking skill. Because in the early days, I find that I was just all over the place, and very like nervous and a bit scared, and I felt like I'm just a junior monk. My understanding on the intellectual part of Buddhism is not that good, but I think in terms of practice, it's okay. I mean, my practice is good enough to keep me happy, and I'm able to be happy in monastic life. So time to time, teaching is a way to sharpen my understanding and wisdom. Because the Buddha did say, there are five ways to develop calm, peace, happiness, and insight. So it's not just meditation. So the Buddha say one is meditation, one is listening to the Dharma, and one is reading the Dharma or memorizing it. Another one is basically reflecting on the teaching once you learn it. And the last one is basically teaching. When you teach the Dharma, you learn at the same time. All these five, when you practice it, it leads to peace, joy, happiness, and insight. Because the mind becomes glad and peaceful when we listen to the teaching of the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path. So that's one thing I find the benefit of teaching, because I'm learning and also our supporters are learning at the same time. So I do enjoy teaching. Not too much, because I find that if I do too much teaching, then I get sore throat right now. So one of the interesting questions that we get when we were teaching was people say that Yeah. Is it important to know everything? Everything in detail, like to read the suttas, to understand the Abhidhamma, and to just read a lot and basic intellectual think about what was learned and healed. And I don't know, I find that it is good to learn a lot, and it's good to read a lot. And reading is good way of learning things, but there's many factors in order for the mind to increase our virtue. So the virtue is basically keeping our precept well, keeping the 8 precept on the opposite day. And so when you keep those 5 and 8 precept, basically we develop virtue. And then when we develop virtue, then we slowly do the work that will develop the heart and the mind, basically purify the mind. Because just reading books along or reading the suttas, it's not going to purify the heart. You need to practice. You need to be a good person, a kind person, practice metta, practice the 4 Brahma-viharis, loving-kindness, metta, compassion, karuna, and mudita, and upekkha, equanimity. So when you develop all these wholesome qualities, it uplifts one's heart and it purifies the mind. Because when the mind is pure from defilements, then you see the cause and condition. Because when you listen to the teaching, it goes back to the source. The source is the mind. Because the mind, if it's clouded by defilements, mainly greed, hatred, and delusion, we don't see things clearly. But if we basically listen, we practice, we purify the heart, then it goes back to the source. The source is our heart and our mind. So when we go back into the source to see this outflowing of the mind. So the outflowing of the mind is our thoughts, our emotion, and our feelings. It's always coming out from the state. We'll say in here and inhale, and it goes through the 5 senses. Then we go into the world and we attach to the world, and we'll do things and behave in a certain way to get what we want. So the work of Dharma practice is basically to purify our action, speech, and mind. Action can be done easily with keeping the precept, but the speech is a bit harder. We have to be mindful, and our thoughts is probably the hardest because our mind is always very active. So when we was giving the class in KL, we noticed some people are very restless, some people are very peaceful. And some people think a lot and have a lot of questions. So I say it does take time to basically calm the mind down and make it calm and peaceful. Because in a city life like KL or any big city, people are very busy. You go to work, they come back from work, they have a lot of responsibility and duties for work and family life. So when they come to a retreat center, or a Buddhist center, it does take a while for the mind to slowly calm down and become peaceful and silent. And when the mind is silent, and when our body becomes very relaxed and peaceful, then hopefully calm and peaceful rise. Because I say it does take a while for this mind to calm down. Because I told the retreatants, don't be too hard on yourself. Because to calm and still the mind, it does take a bit of momentum. And I say that I did Google on Google that this is what Google say, that a human being have up to about something like 80, 70 to even 50,000 thoughts a day. Yep. So that's a lot of thinking that we think about. So in an hour, it's about 3,000 to 2,000 thoughts an hour. So in a minute, that is about 60 to 30 thoughts a minute. So it's almost a thought every second. So we can be very active. So it just takes a while to calm the mind down. So that's why when we give a guidance, sometimes we have to give quite a few instruction just for this body to relax and for the mind to slowly unwind, calm down, and become peacefuler. You see, the first day is the hardest. Then the second day becomes easier. Then the third day, it's a lot better. But you see, on a 3-day retreat, it's not too bad. You can get enough calm, peacefulness, and stillness in the mind. But on a one-day retreat, we find it can be a bit rushed. So I think next time we'll plan it for maybe a 3-day retreat in KL. Yep. So it does take a while for the mind to calm down. Like even when I came back from Malaysia, I do notice my mind was racing a bit. Yep. But I was quite high and quite joyful. So the whole experience is very uplifting. But when I come back to the Kuti, on the way walking to Kuti at Bodhinyana Monastery, up at Hermit Hill, I just noticed, wow, the forest up here is very peaceful. Like you can hear the winds and the birds. And just the insects. And at night, it's so quiet. It's just the silence. Yep. So sometimes when I do leave the monastery and go to a very busy place, the center and the Dharma hall is going to be very peaceful. But when you come back to the monastery, wow, this place is ultra peaceful. Yep. There's no traffic, no traffic jam. There's not heaps of people running around the place. And also you feel so free and at ease. And those are the ideal condition, basically to calm the mind and to still the mind. Yep. Because in order to deepen our meditation, you still the mind. We need those conditions. Because I was reflecting, the Buddha was basically born in the forest before it was enlightened as a young prince or rich person of a clan. And he did. He renounced and head to the forest where he practiced for a few years until he broke through. And even he was fully enlightened, he did spend a lot of time in the forest because the forest is a place of comfort and peace and freedom. And as he got older, his heart was always inclined back to the forest. So he went back to the forest and passed away and went to Parinibbana. Yep. So I realized, wow, the forest is basically our natural home for a meditator and a simple forest monk. I'm like myself, I'm a pretty simple forest monk. So my heart is always inclined to quiet, peaceful place because there's a lot of peace and freedom and joy. Yep. Yeah, so it's always very joyful to come back to the monastery and head back to my forest and spend a lot of time by myself, watch the plants grow around my kuti, and enjoy the birds and kangaroos that come and visit. Yeah, so that's a short reflection. Well, I guess we can do some guided meditation. Yeah. Because I've been talking a lot overseas. So it's time to slowly unwind and just calm the mind down. Yep. So meditation is basically learning to have a break, to really unwind, to just let go of all our burdens and responsibility. Because in the world, it can be very, very busy. And sometimes, if we're not careful, that busyness we carry along in our heart and in our mind to the point that we think a lot, we plan a lot, and it becomes like a condition that we cannot slowly let go. But the training of meditation or the training of the mind is just to slowly calm things down, to settle all our business and all our responsibility. Because if we don't settle our business and responsibility, then at night we find it hard to sleep because the mind is very active and we still hold on to a lot of things in life. I mean, the good things are nice to hold on to. It uplifts our heart, but sometimes a lot of negative things that we might face, and those are things that we must let go. Because if we don't let go, it builds up in our heart, and it becomes stronger and stronger. Then it consumes our heart and our mind to the point that become very anxiety, a lot strong anxiety, and fear arise. So that's why it's so important just to ground our awareness in this body, because we can feel the tension and the tightness within our body. That's why the body awareness is very important. The more we can relax the body, then we can let go of our anxiety and fear. Yeah, because the body can be really tense. So sometimes I realize when people are sitting in meditation in the group, they are just using willpower. Because willpower is what they are conditioned at lay life to study hard, to be responsible, to work hard, and to achieve. But because of those conditioning so strong, we bring it back to home to the point where, yeah, fear and anxieties do arise. So the letting go of this tension within the body is very important. So we let go of the tension first, then we let go of the tension in our mind. Yep. So I do remember before I was a meditator, I used to worry so much when I got a headache. When I started doing meditation, then my headache slowly went away, and I felt like I was a happy young child again. So that's something that I really miss and always long for. So I think that's one reason why I became a monastic. So it's just feel like a young child again. Just almost calm, relaxed and carefree. Okay, so we will start the meditation. So please, just sit down, relax. And if you're in a dark environment, that's ideal. For me, I got like one big spotlight here, another big spotlight here, and sometimes another one in the back. So I do get a lot of light. So I guess that's the nature of doing online garden meditation. But you do have the luxury having a quiet, dark room and peaceful. So on that class, one of the ladies in the class was saying that she'll meditate and she'll get tension here in the head. And we say this is meditation headache, because when you watch the breath, you're basically putting all your effort watching our breathing here. So I say, okay, sometimes it's better not to use the word watch, because watching is putting effort here. Just use the word awareness. So awareness is basically knowing. So we know, you know that you're listening to my voice. You know that now you're sitting on your chair. You know that you're leaning in the back. You know that your lower back is on the chair, or your bottom is on the chair. And you know that your feet is on the ground. Then when you bring your awareness back to your breath, you know that you're breathing. So that's the amount of awareness you need, just knowing the body and knowing the breath. Yep. So it's not using focus or effort, just pure awareness. Yep. So with pure awareness, we gently bring our awareness to the front of our face and we slowly close our eye. With our eye closed, we are fully aware of our body. Yep, and with that awareness, we always start off just relaxing our body. You see, I like to start from the top of our head, then gently bring your awareness right to the top of your head, and we relax. Relax our head, and relax our forehead, and we bring your awareness to our face. Then you relax your face. With your face relaxed, also relax our eyes. Then we bring our awareness to our jaw. Relax our jaw. Then we relax our throat. And now we gently bring our awareness to our back, our neck. So we relax our neck. With our neck relax, now we gently bring your awareness to our upper body, the part that is connected to our arm socket. We know if it's tight or raised, we just bring it down and relax our upper body. Now bring your awareness to your right arm and relax your right arm. And we do the same with our left arm. Relax our left arm. And if you need to, you can please move both your arm around. Make it comfortable and relax both our arms. And now we bring our awareness to our hands, both our hands and our fingers. And if you need to, please move your hands and fingers around and just relax. Relax both our hands and fingers. Make sure it's nice and comfortable and loose, and just relax your fingers. And now we bring our awareness gently back to our chest, and we just notice we are breathing in and breathing out gently and calmly and naturally, breathing in and breathing out, and we relax our chest. And now we bring our awareness to our tummy. Make sure our tummy is nice and loose. Our waist is not too tight from our clothing. And we relax our tummy. And now we bring our awareness back up to our spine. So gently just relax our spine from the top of our neck slowly down to our upper back and down to the middle of our back and all the way down to the bottom part where we're sitting on the chair, on the cushion, or on the sofa. Relax our back. And now we bring our awareness to our right leg. And we just notice any part of our right leg that is a bit stiff or tight, and just relax all the way down from our knees down to our ankle. And now we bring the same awareness to our left leg, from the top down to our knees and down to our ankle. And if you need to, please gently move both your leg around and just relax. Relax our leg. And if you need to, you can always adjust your whole body and make it as comfortable as possible. And finally, we bring our awareness to both our feet. And we relax both our feet, from our ankle down to our heel and all the way down to our toes. And if you need to, you can gently move it around and just relax our toe and both our feet. With this whole body relaxed, now we can finally bring our awareness to our whole body and just feel any part of our body that's still a bit tense or tight or a bit achy, a slight pain, and we just relax any part of our body that's still stiff or tight. Move it around and just relax our whole body. Now it's time to make peace with this body, this old body, or sometimes this sick body. Or, if you're still young, this old, this tired body. So, we make peace with the body and we relax this whole body from our head all the way down to our feet. When the body is fully relaxed, now we bring our awareness back to our face. Then we notice our breathing in and breathing out calmly and peacefully. I like to use the word just breathing in peace and breathing out relax. Peace and relax. Or sometimes calm and letting go. Calm and letting go. And just breathe naturally, peacefully and calmly. Meditation is just learning to make peace and relax this body. When the body is relaxed, then we use our breathing to calm our mind, to calm our thoughts, to calm our emotion, and to make peace with ourselves, and especially with this body that's tired, old, or sometimes sickly. Saying on the retreat, the mind will wander time to time, to past, to future, to what happened during the day. It's okay. Sometimes we have to see our thoughts are just like the clouds moving past during the day. Some days can be very stormy, some days there's thunder, sometimes there's lightning, and some days it's very beautiful and clear and bright. Some days can be very windy. So our mind is just like that. It goes with course and conditioning during the day. But now it's time to make peace with the moment and just watch our thoughts pass by just like the clouds and the storm during the day. We watch our thoughts and emotion, but we make peace with ourselves and allow it to pass. as you become more calm and peaceful, you tend to feel your body more. So this is probably when the body awareness can be quite strong, but it's okay. You can just gently move your body, adjust it, adjust the tension. Let's relax and make peace with this body and gently let it go. When the body is comfortable, then gently bring your awareness back to the breathing. And this is a way of our breathing in and breathing out, softly and calmly, making peace with this moment. Meditation is not about stopping our thinking. It's basically calming everything down. The more we calm our mind and our thoughts, then the more peaceful and relaxed we become. Use awareness just to feel our body and just relax. Relax this body. Once the body becomes relaxed, then we can slowly relax our mind. And calm our thoughts. As things become more calm and peaceful, you will just be aware of the silence of the room. So just allow the silence of the room just to calm the mind further. Things are quiet and settled, we make peace with the moment and especially with ourselves. So please enjoy the rest of the quiet time. So we will finish soon, but it's always good just to reflect how you are, how you feel, and how peaceful you are at this moment. So it's always good to be aware of one's condition of one's heart and mind before the meditation and after. So when you reflect on the condition now, then you realize how more peaceful, calm and relaxed you are now. So just reflect on the state of mind now, just for a few more minutes. So let's slowly come out from the meditation and just relax for a minute. Yeah, sometimes it just takes a while for our senses to slowly come about. Yeah, I'm not sure how well people can hear my voice, because on the both retreat in Malaysia, one of the feedback from the retreatants is like they don't hear my voice clearly. Maybe sometimes I might speak too softly. So yeah, Chris, please let me know.
Bajan, that your voice has definitely come through very clearly.
Okay.
And it also does come through very clearly, because I always listen to your podcast too, and it comes through very clearly on the podcast.
Okay. I think we probably invested well in the recording equipment and microphone here. But I think in Malaysia, they don't have the best quality recording system. So maybe that's why they can't hear me properly. And some places they have like fan going on the background because they have this big hole and it's quite hot and humid. So they have this big fan that's running, and maybe that's why they don't hear my voice properly, to the point where I have to raise really loudly just for people in the background to hear. But I guess the recording system here is excellent. Yeah, so it's hard for me to gauge how much instruction I give, Because one thing I noticed, the feedback from both retreat in Malaysia, some people say is excellent. Is the more instruction the better. Some people say that there's too much instruction. It's becoming a distraction. And some people say it's just the right instruction. And some people say they don't want any instruction at all. So sometimes we just give 15 minutes instruction. That's why this time I just finished, did not give too much instruction, and just have more time for people to really enjoy the meditation. And sometimes we do recommend people, if they need to do walking meditation, they can just get out and do walking meditation first. And when they are more relaxed, they're more mindful of the body, then they can come back and just do sitting. Because sitting meditation is something that we also teach on the retreat, because sometimes when we are very busy, we have a very busy lifestyle schedule, and our mind is very active, because our thoughts is like almost endless. When we sit down, it's just racing non-stop in our head, to the point that we feel like we're going mad or crazy. So sometimes it's good to do some walking meditation. So on the retreats, we ask people to just do walking meditation back and forward on a straight line. So basically, for those that haven't learned walking meditation before, it's basically when you're walking, you gaze down maybe 1 or 2 meters right in front of you. And when you walk, you just lift up one leg and step down. Then the next leg, lift and step down. So you're aware of the whole motion of your leg walking forward, and place it on the ground. So you're aware of the feeling of the touch, raising up and stepping down. Then the next leg movement. So you're aware of the whole movement of your leg. Your hand is basically just like this. Hold like this and just walk back. Maybe 20 or 30 steps, depend how big your room is, or your hall, or in the back of the garden. So what walking meditation does, it grounds your awareness to the whole body. And the more you walk, then the awareness of the body will increase. Then as you're fully aware of the moment of your whole body, so you're basically grounding your awareness on the whole body, just mainly the motion of the leg. Then your thoughts will slowly calm down, become more calm and more relaxed. And if you walk longer, after a while, you feel like it's just automatically walking back and forward. And sometimes for some people that like to do walking meditation, they find that after maybe half an hour or 1 hour, then you feel like it's just floating. It's just floating, and your body becomes very light, and it's just like automatically just walking and just turning around and just walking and turning around back and forward. And it's just aware of the whole motion. So yeah, they call that you're in the zone. So once you're in the zone, then you sit down and do sitting meditation. Then it's easier just to watch the breath in and out. Because I find it was very beneficial if when I was a layperson. Yeah, I got all these thoughts and distraction. And if I find that I was very anxious, having a panic attack, or sometimes really angry as a layperson, I do a lot of walking meditation just to calm my mind down and relax the body. Once it's relaxed, that was easier. So you might notice I'm pretty relaxed and quite peaceful. But when I was a young layperson, I was really angry, to the point where everyone called me Mr. Negative or fault finding. to the point where I was just having panic attack and fear all the time. Can't sleep. My hand was shaking. I was a complete basket case. So when I started learning meditation, loving kindness, then I felt like happy and free again. I was a child again. Almost carefree. And I improved in my work. Then I got promoted. And it just got better and better. So having a very stable mind does improve things. So meditation is not just letting go. It's just bringing your awareness back and allowing your focus. So when you do something, you do it with right effort, right intention. And when you do things, your mind's not scattered. Yep. When you do something well. And you become very stable. Your emotion is not like running around the whole place, like a storm. Then you become very aware when you're anxious, when you're angry or frustrated. Then you can always just come back to the body, come back to the breath, and just calm yourself down with a couple of breaths. And sometimes when I was working, after lunch, I'll go sit in my car and just relax and just do some silent meditation for 10 minutes or 5 minutes. After that, I find, wow, I was so energized that I can basically just work two shifts, double shift. And on the retreat, I did mention like for people that work a lot, very stressful. I was overworked and very stressful. But I was always aware of my thoughts and my feelings. And I always calm my heart and mind down. So I become a very effective worker, able to concentrate, able to do things, and also be very productive. And so after I paid off all my debts, I had my letter to my boss, and I told my supervisor, I'm leaving the company. I'm going to go up to do some religious study up in the monastery. And I always remember my supervisor and my boss told me, Kim, don't leave. Stay in this company. They will increase everyone's pay in the future. I said, no, I'm going to do some religious study. And he told me that he have worked with so many people in the company. And he said that you're the most calmness and most relaxed person and able to do so much work and be very productive. And because I was calm and mindful, it actually made him very relaxed too. So that's something nice to hear from my supervisor. Yeah, so even meditation is not letting go. It is letting go, but it's basically let go of the negative emotion that leads to a lot of worry and anxiety. So on the retreat in KL, I say all this thinking, all this reading, you have to put it in practice. So when you put it in practice, you become happy in the moment. You have a healthier heart, a healthier mind. And you basically live a longer life, and not stressing and worrying all the time. Yeah. So I told the people in Malaysia, KL, and Johor Bahru, like in the West, people learn meditation first to get some benefit, to get some calm and peace. Once they get the result, then they read more books on Dharma practice. Then they keep the precept last, to basically become a good person, become generous, and just purify the heart. But in Malaysia and Asian country, it's the opposite. They keep the precept first, become generous. Then they read a lot of books, and they study a lot on the teaching, and they become very smart, even smarter than the monks. Some of the questions they ask me, and Bani Bodhidharma, is so like they're so smart and like become like a professor in sutta study that myself and Bodhi, we can't even answer their smartness. I say that we are practitioner. We're not like professor of Dharma or sutta study. And if they want to have an intellectual debate, please talk to Ajahn Pamali, because he's a Pali and a sutta master. He really knows his sutta back and front. Yep. So as for myself, I only practice to get benefit. So I'm not a mad person. A mad person was a lay person. But also just to get some happiness as a monastic. Yep. To enjoy being a simple forest monk up at Serpentine Monastery. Yeah. So to become silent and peaceful is something that takes time, and it does condition the mind. So I told the people on the retreat, it's like learning. We learn to write with our right hand. So the right hand is the thinking and doing mind. There's always busy thinking, planning, and very active. So when we write with right hand, we're always very used to using this hand. But if we learn to write with a left hand, it will take a while to condition the right of a left hand. So the left hand is like the mind is quiet, peaceful, but fully aware. So it does take a while for our thoughts to calm down. So once our thoughts is calmed down, it becomes just really calm, pure awareness. We calm, we aware, but we know. It's like you're peaceful and you're aware, and your thoughts is just like echo in the background. So when you know things clearly. Not like just endless scattered thoughts. Yep. So it would be hard to explain. It's like when you have a problem, you think about it a lot, you can't solve the problem. But you go back home, you have a sleep. Then when you sleep, the next day you have a clear mind. Then you look at the problem, then it makes sense very clearly. Because the mind is free from too much clutter. Yep. So when you have a clear mind, you see the problem, it becomes very clear. And you see the solution more clearly. Yep. Anyway, it's time to any questions from the group you'd like to ask?
Yes, indeed. Would you like to start off with me reading a question for you from the chat?
Thank you, yes.
I would like to ask Ajahn about feeling mad or crazy, like he was feeling mad or crazy, that he mentioned in meditation earlier. Because we face our mind in not so calm states, we should not force ourselves to sit down and meditate. Is that correct?
Yes.
Is walking meditation the best option to calm down the mind?
Sometimes if we are very agitated or scattered or confused, sometimes we need to basically just do some walking meditation to calm the mind down. And if that don't work, like myself, if I'm pretty complete regular, where I'm just being scolded and put down all the time in the monastery. Because sometimes I do make mistake, and if people are having a hard time, sometimes they take it out on me. And if that happened, I realized, okay, I just go for a walk around the monastery, enjoy the quiet time, enjoy the scenery, watch the kangaroos, the birds, and just enjoy the whole environment of the monastery, because the monastery do have a calming effect. So when you calm down and you relax, then I walk back to my kuti and just sit and relax. Then I know it's not the best time to meditate. I just have a rest, have a nap, wake up, and once the mind is more calm and peaceful, then it's easy to do meditation. And also, it's not our fault. It's just conditioning. Because I find that the more senior I am, the more responsibility I take, and the more blame I get. So blame and blame is, you cannot escape from that. It's just so the worldly condition. The more senior I become, the more blame I get. So if I go traveling overseas, I get so much praise. Then when I come back here, the cars are completely breaking down as a mess. Then people will basically shout at me, hey, the car's broken down. Please fix it. Do your job. So, I mean, we do have a fleet of old bombs in the monastery. Sometimes I use the word, the cars in the monastery are a bit of a free-for-all. So if you use it, when they damage, they come looking for me to fix the cars. I still got my old karma as when I was a mechanic up in the mines, fixing all the trucks and all the four-wheel drive and ute. So in the monastery, sometimes the monastery is getting bigger and bigger, and we're having more and more cars. So things like that do happen. They go out, the windshield is cracked, the tire is bald, the tires are flat, things don't work out, they run out of fuel in the vehicle, or sometimes they crash the car. Not once, but one time I went to India and it was damaged. But before that, someone crashed the back, I fixed it up. Then a month later, they crashed the front, I fixed it up. I went to India, I came back, and crashed the back again. I almost lost it. I go, geez, all these workers in the monastery, community people, they don't even have mindfulness to take care of the car. How come I can't have to fix the car all the time? And I just lost it. Then it's not the time for me to sit down and meditate. I just have to go for a walk, listen to a nice Dharma talk, do the meditation, and really calm myself down. So once I calm down, okay, it's just me being silly again. Yeah, but in Buddhism, we have this concept of non-self. The more we feed the self, the more crazy we become. The less we feed the self, just through loving kindness and letting go, and equanimity, then the mind becomes calm and peaceful. And realize that, okay, it's just a condition of the mind. Yeah, when things go wrong, we don't feed it. When things go right, we delight in it, and it leads to more peace and more happiness. Especially like Dharma teaching. So that's one thing I enjoy, because when you teach, you learn, and you understand, and you help other people. So it's win-win. Yeah. So I don't know. It's so interesting being a monk these days. I'm still learning, so I'll probably keep on learning until the day I die. And if I don't get my act together, then I get reborn and start over again. But hopefully the conditioning and the seed that is planted in this life will enable all of us to basically just continue on in our next life. Because this practice of understanding the Four Noble Truths, it's very, very important. Because the whole world, people are feeding on defilements. Look at the news. There's so much trouble, so much problem in the world. And they're looking for solution outside. But as for Buddhists and practitioners, we look for the problem in our heart. When we understand why we are suffering, then we understand why people are suffering. It's because we're all human beings. Yep, so we want the world to be perfect. It's not going to happen. But if we fix our heart and we purify our mind, then we try and make ourselves as perfect as possible, then we see everyone in the world suffering. Yep, and because they're suffering, they are lost. They think the five senses and the worldly happiness, getting wealth, being famous, being very busy. Yeah, being very busy. Will bring them happiness. But it's just endless. It's just constantly feeding the self and the ego. It's only when the mind is calm and peaceful, then we look inside, then we find happiness is always there. Yep. As happy as a child. Yep. So we should always try and condition our heart to be happy and free and carefree. Just for the moment. Then when we care and happy and free in that moment, then life is not a burden. Life becomes very uplifting and quite colorful. Yep. So Venerable Bodhidharma and myself, we went and taught the four Brahma Viharas in Malaysia. So in things, simple teaching like that, people do benefit. Because people are so stressed. And the Brahma Viharas do remind them of being having loving kindness to oneself and other people, seeing the suffering in other people, karuna, or compassion, and looking at the good of other people, so rejoicing, so mudita, that means rejoicing in other people's good act. And also, when things are, we have no control over, then opaque, being an equanimity to one's heart. Yep, and the meditation brings all this together. Yeah. Okay, I hope that makes sense. Thank you.
Right, is there anyone else who would like to unmute and ask a question or to put a question in the chat?
Can I ask one?
Yes.
Please. Yes, please.
So I have a problem of addiction to something, and then I think I have it for a very long time. I just do not want to admit. I just do not admit it to a certain point, and then I do stop it for like, I think it's 2 months or something like that. But every year to summer, I get a bit depressed, mm-hmm. and then because I'm depressed, I end up going back to it. And then when I'm going back to it, I realize that it is harder for me to stop. I don't know why, but I just start to like getting off it now, like these few days. And then I have a question, is like, how can you give me some advice on how to cope with the strong craving coming up? Because I know it is better for me to stop, but my mind will be like, because my mind wants to go back, and then I will have a lot of like struggle around it, and I would like to have some advice on it.
Okay, it's normal. That's one of the most common questions that we have on the retreat. Because me and Bodhidharma say that, okay, we should say, okay, just limit it to meditation question. So on the interview, people come over, or when they put question and answer on the basket for us to answer, we knew that people will have problems they have to deal with. So when they come out, I realize, okay, yeah, being a human being, when things happen, it can be very traumatic. And if we carry the trauma in our heart, it becomes stronger and stronger until it consumes our thoughts. When we wake up, the trauma comes back. And when we sleep, we have bad dreams, like nightmares. Yeah, then we feel like we're a complete hopeless case. We fail. We are a bad person. We're not perfect. We made a lot of bad karma. But the good thing is, we have to use our reflection and realize that if we didn't make so much mistake, then we will not learn. Because if we make a mistake, we learn. And when we learn, we let go. Like myself, I made so many mistakes. And when I start thinking about it, I become very negative. And so it's like, the more I think about it, it's like I go like completely mad. And then my fantastic friend will notice and told me, you have to stop thinking about it and bring up the past. It happened, and there's nothing I can do about it. I go, oh yeah, that's true. I'm a Buddhist monk. I meant to practice well, but I'll bring up the problem again. But okay, I need to be more happier, be more kinder to people. And go and do teaching. So I did more teaching now, since I have 10 reins now. Actually, I have 12 reins. So I find that the more I teach, the more I help people, the more happier I became. And what happened to me in the past, it does come, but I counter it with all the good things I do at the moment. Yep. So it brings me a lot of happiness and joy. Yep. The things that I did in the past, I was taking advantage of. I felt like I was used. And they just use me to get their gain. And once they got what they want, they just push me aside and got other people to take over. So I felt like I was a spare tire, just being used as a timer because there's no one there. So when they use me, when things are doing very well, when there's no debt, when there's a lot of money coming in, and there's full of people coming supporting the place, then they say, you just step aside. We have other people that can run the place better and do a better job. I felt really angry and used. And also like basically, it's like you see people suffering, and you want to help them because they're having a hard time. But once everything is doing well, it's like they forget you. It's like you're just another monk. You're a young monk. You don't give the best time to talk. Like, we got better monks that's older, and they give better talks. That made me very upset. Yeah, so when I came back to Bodhiyana, The monks called me, yeah, this is so negative and grumpy. I was angry for 2 weeks. After that, I just become more relaxed, more happier. Because I was overworked, put down, and humiliated. Yeah, and I felt I was used and degraded and scolded all the time. All I did was trying to help a place out. So I understand. That's quite normal. We all go through that. On the retreat, that's the most common thing that came out with a lot of people. How do you deal with the problem? So I always gave the example of Ajahn Brown's story, the two bad bricks. So Ajahn Brown was putting the bricks up in the early days, doing a lot of hard work. And he put two bricks, and he got out of place, and he sat. So every time he saw the two bad bricks, he got really angry, and he really wanted to destroy it, pull it down, start over again, or get the dynamite and blow it up. But Ajahn Jagguru at the time was an abbot, so Brahma Wansola was still a middle monk. No, leave it as it is, and just continue. So when Ajahn Brahm will walk past, he see the two back bricks, he'll get really upset again. Yep. And one time he was showing them people around the monastery, and then he showed them the wall, and the people say, "Wow, look at that wall, it's so beautiful." And Ajahn was saying, "Are you blind? Don't you see the two back bricks up there?" And the guy said, "Yes, I can see the two back bricks out of place, but I can see the 999 good bricks." And Ajahn was saying, "Oh, that's true. He laid two bad bricks, but the rest of the bricks is just perfect." And he realized life is like that. We always bring up the past. We always bring up the hurt. We always bring up it's not fair. It should not happen. We felt that we exploited and used and taken advantage. Or when family members start passing away or dying, and we miss them. Yeah, so that's one thing I realized on going on retreats and talking to people, everyone's suffering. So when I think of things that happened to me that's not nice or been taken advantage of, I realize, okay, I'm thinking of the two bad bricks. I need to let it go and look at the 999 good bricks. Yeah, so I think all the good things I did, and it makes me happy. Yeah, and I told the people on the retreat, if you ever come to Bodhiyana Monastery, feel free to ask me if you see me, and I'll take you straight to the two back bricks. Yep. So yeah, so you ever come to Bodhiyana, ask me, and I'll show you the two back bricks. Yeah, so yeah, life can be tough, but we just keep on doing good things, purify our heart, and just let go of the hurt or the unfairness of the world. If we don't let go, then what we do is we try and make things even and take it out on other people that have done us wrong. And by doing that, basically we're just making more bad karma. So it's always good to forgive other people. But the most important thing is forgive yourself. That's very important. Yeah. So that's something hard I find to do. But I just keep forgiving myself and realize I'm not a perfect monk. But as long as it's self, it's suffering. But when the mind is calm and very peaceful, then the self disappears. Then you realize, yeah, there's peace, happiness, and freedom. Okay. Anyway, I hope that makes sense.
It made wonderful sense to me, and what wonderful advice. Thank you, Ajahn. Ajahn, would you like to finish with a blessing for us all in Pali? Or
yes.
Whatever you would like.
Yes. Yes, okay. So this is basically may the teaching of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha protect you wherever you go. Nati ne sanananganu, putu ne sanananganu, ete nasajawate asutite hotisapata. Nati ne sanananganu, tamu ne sanananganu, ete na sacha wate na sutite hoti sapata nati ne sananyanu sangu me sananyanu ete na sacha wate na sutite hoti sapata. Okay, so that's a quick blessing. Please take care wherever you are. I do admit life can be a bit tough now. Life can be very busy. There's so much responsibility. There's so much things happening in the world. It seems like the world is a very frightening and dark place. But on the last day of the retreat, I told the retreatant, why complain about the problem of the world? If you can like a light of wisdom in one's heart and mind, and that will basically free us from the darkness of the world. So we should just develop our heart and our mind, and that way we're free from just the things that happen in the world. We cannot change the world, but we can change our heart, and that is the most precious thing in the world. So when we purify our heart, we do good, then we become happy and free. Okay, thank you.